Thank you for visiting the Illinois Supported Employment Transformation Initiative website. The following recording is part of our IPS Training and Education online library. Visit our website to obtain free information and resources to promote employment in the behavioral health field.
Hi, my name is Suzanne Logsdon, and I am an IPS trainer with the Division of Mental Health for Illinois. I'm here to talk to you today about engagement. When we think about engagement, which is the first phase of the IPS supported employment model, I really want to get at what the definition of to engage or engagement is. It's really getting at gaining someone's attention and their interest so that they can become busy, occupied, and involved in an activity. In this case, with finding competitive preference-based employment and sustaining that employment. It's so important to build a strong, engaging relationship with clients from the get-go. What that means is that you want to be clear in terms of expectations. Being honest, consistent, and clear with your communication will really help to establish a strong, engaged relationship with clients. There are some really good things to discuss during the enrollment phase when first interacting with clients about their work goals. First of all, it's really important to emphasize to clients that the process is about finding the right job that they want to do, not just any job that they're willing to do. It's also important to establish that it's a working relationship, that the process of finding and keeping competitive preference-based employment really involves both the employment specialist and the client working collaboratively together towards the goal of looking for work. You also want to make sure that you discuss the time commitment that's going to be involved in the journey of looking for competitive preference-based employment. If you are certain that you're going to be able to commit to two-hour meetings every week, make sure that you let the client know that up front so that they can expect to find time in their schedule to accommodate that two-hour session per week. Also, we know that the IPS-supported employment model is most effective when client meetings occur in the community. In fact, per the Fidelity Scale, 65 to 70% of meetings and actions should occur within the community. So it's really important to establish that expectation up front. You also want to inquire about the client's benefits and their knowledge about how working may impact those benefits, as well as touch on the resource that is offered within your state in terms of a certified benefit planner to help that consumer to gain more knowledge and confidence as it relates to working and their entitlements. It's important during that meeting to verify client contact information. Oftentimes, phone numbers, mailing addresses, and living addresses change from the time that a referral is made to that first meeting. So it's very important that you verify the phone number, the address, so that you can make sure to have a strong connection from the get-go. It's also really important to hone great motivational interviewing skills during that first meeting to really get at helping clients to realize what their skills, strengths, and life interests and passions are. This is really a bedrock in terms of the IPS supported employment model and making sure that we are helping clients to find jobs that they want to do, that they are passionate about and interested in, as opposed to just a job. And I think as a best policy, this holds true. Don't say it if you don't mean it and can't follow through. It's very important, as I said at the beginning, that when you are talking about what the process of the IPS-supported employment program will look like, that you're clear, honest, and consistent with your communication. When thinking about ways to build upon the engagement factor that is bolstered at the very beginning of the IPS journey, but that also carries throughout and will help support the process of looking for and keeping competitive preference-based employment. It's helpful to think about utilizing some basic CBT skills. In particular, it's really important, although it may sound obvious, to make sure that you are actively listening to clients as they're sharing with you during that engagement and assessment phase. So good eye contact and open body language without legs or arms crossed, making sure that you're nodding and validating comments in the conversation is important. Basic CBT skills that really lend themselves to a strong therapeutic relationship include making sure that you're validating patients and relaying empathy in terms of their experiences that they're sharing. You also want to make sure that you're being genuine and having a tremendous level of respect shown as you're interacting with each and every individual client. A really powerful tool in CBT that I found to be effective when working with clients on finding and keeping employment is using reframing. So example may be, a client may say, my depression makes me feel stagnant and incapable of working. And when you hear that, you may say, I'm hearing you say your depression is a barrier to getting a job. But we also know that getting a job will boost your motivation and decrease depressive symptoms. So you can see that in that example, a negative statement made by the client is validated, but is also followed by a different point of view or perspective that has a much more positive connotation. I used to say, what you feed your mind is basically what you say to yourself is what you're feeding your mind. And so if a client is continuously utilizing negative self-talk and putting themselves down, and there isn't some growth in terms of reframing and taking a positive perspective on a statement that feels very negative, then in essence the client is really not able to grow and build upon their skills and strengths, which is really a strong component of helping a client to reach their work goals. When we talk about continuing to build that strong engagement, especially during the assessment phase of IPS, motivational interviewing readily comes to mind. According to SAMHSA, motivational interviewing is a clinical approach that helps people with mental illness and substance use disorders and other chronic conditions such as diabetes, cardiovascular conditions, and asthma make positive behavioral changes to support better health. The approach upholds four principles: expressing empathy and avoiding arguing, developing discrepancy, rolling with resistance, and supporting self-efficacy, which is a client's belief in their ability to make a change. This is a very strong and necessary evidence-based practice model to utilize to build that engagement and to have an effective assessment session. So the key principles of motivational interviewing are expressing empathy. So this is really where you are taking time to understand where a client is and conveying that to them, guiding the client to understand and listen to themselves. We know that change occurs when an individual accepts who they are and where they are. So it's very important that we are utilizing empathy as sort of a launch pad to help clients to really gain trust and acceptance with themselves. Utilizing reflective listening is a really powerful tool when it comes to this principle. Saying back to the client what they are saying can be very powerful, and just in terms of them connecting the dots and breaking that cognitive dissonance to really understand how they feel about themselves and where they're at in terms of those stages of change. It's also really important to note that ambivalence is normal and is a critical element for all human growth. While we'd like to think of things as, okay, we notice that there's a problem, we move forward, take action, go to the next step, that's in an ideal world. But humans really need to take time, sometimes stages and awareness of one's self in terms of skills, strengths, even negative viewpoints can really create a sense of ambivalence, and that's a perfectly normal feeling to associate, particularly when looking at taking a leap into change. The second principle of motivational interviewing is develop discrepancy. So this is where change is motivated by a perceived discrepancy between the behavior of the client and what they're saying they want to do. This happens a lot in the process of looking for work. So the more that you can help bring forward and bring to light what a client's behavior is saying versus what they're actually articulating, and doing that in a gentle, empathetic manner to help the client to see that there's a disconnect perhaps between what they're saying they want to do and what they're actually doing, the better the chance to kind of motivate and agitate for that change that is needed to take the next steps toward finding that competitive job. So an example, on one hand, I hear you saying you want to work as a janitor, and on the other hand, you said the last job you had as a janitor didn't end so well. So tell me about that. So you can hear in that example what the client is saying they want to do versus what their work history is saying about that particular job preference is incongruent. There's a discrepancy. So telling the client that and kind of putting that out on the table allows for proactive conversation and exploration to open up getting at maybe some of the fears or the self-doubt that the client may have in terms of opening up their preference. Rolling with resistance is the third principle that I have outlined for Motivational Interviewing 101. And this is really getting at the resistance or disconnect a person offers, and reframing that slightly to create a momentum towards change. You want to really avoid confrontation or any sense of arguing, as this just creates more stress for everyone involved. If you are experiencing stress as you're introducing, and helping a client to recognize some disconnect from what they're saying and what they want to do through some reframing, it's a signal to respond differently. So, for example, in the previous example on the slide before, where the client was stating that they wanted to work as a janitor, but then when reviewing the work history and seeing a lot of janitorial work that didn't end well, and having that conversation, it could really ignite for a client a sense of confrontation, and they may feel a sense of distrust and that you're disvalidating what they're saying they want to do. If you experience that, it doesn't mean stop the conversation necessarily, but it does mean stop and think about how you're approaching that topic. Listen and see if you can reframe the conversation to really get at what the client is becoming aware of to agitate for that change. At the end of the day, the client has the answers. We as clinicians and employment specialists do not. So validating the client throughout the process, expressing empathy throughout the conversation is key. Lastly, supporting self-efficacy, which is, a person's belief in his or her ability to carry out a task to succeed. This is key for change and is also a really good predictor of treatment outcome. Having hope one can move forward and make change is a critical piece of not only building engagement and generating a really strong wealth of knowledge through that vocational assessment, but just that also boosting and gathering that momentum that is necessary for the change that will be necessary to match with employers in the community. The more that a client has self-belief and seeds of hope are planted to that end, the more that their confidence will be boosted and their ability to have faith and in taking action steps towards the goal will occur. So once you've established a strong, engaged working relationship up front, it's important to sustain elements of the engagement process and keep the clients engaged as you enter a rapid job search phase and even a job retention phase once the client is consumed. Some ways that consumers can participate in job search meetings, which gets at clients being actively engaged in the process, include hands-on computer work. When you schedule sessions to work with clients on completing online applications, the natural process is that the employment specialist will be at the computer actually inputting the information into the application, while the client sort of sits next to them and watches and maybe answers questions. I have found that this is not the most effective manner in which to keep the client engaged and participatory in those necessary but sometimes mundane pieces of the rapid job search. At the end of the day, applications have to be completed and submitted. And, you know, it's really important that even if your client doesn't have strong computer skills, that you engage them in that process. Maybe carve out 10 to 15 minutes where they initiate the application and at least put in some of their basic demographics, their name, their address, their phone number. And then maybe switch back for time's sake and put in the other necessary details to the application, such as the work history and the dates and some of those details. But it's important that you share in that responsibility with the client. Same thing for looking for jobs online, job openings. You know, employment specialists, just out of a need to kind of keep the process moving, often spend a lot of time online searching for openings that are in line with each client's preference. That certainly is something that should happen, but it's also important to teach our clients how to do that for themselves. Just because a client doesn't have computer skills doesn't mean that they can't be engaged in looking for those online job leads in a more direct fashion in your sessions. So an employment specialist may bring 2 to 3 job leads that they've found online, but they also may spend 10 to 15 minutes at the end of the session you know, showing the client where they've looked for those online job leads and helping the client to develop some of those skill sets themselves. Another way to engage consumers is by giving them homework to create an elevator speech or pitch, or to practice interview questions or skills, and making sure that not only do you model and teach mock interview skills and elevator pitch building skills in your session and perhaps give that as homework, but making sure then at the follow-up session that you're asking the client about the homework, having them demonstrate what they did and express how that felt. That really helps the client to feel involved, engaged, and as if they are working towards the goal of looking for work as much as you are in terms of assisting them. Other ways to keep consumers engaged during job search meetings, during the actual job development phase and interacting with employers, you want to try to keep the client as engaged as possible. Of course, disclosure and whether or not the client wants to disclose is a factor in this case, but if you have clients that are open to disclosing, I encourage you to think about taking clients with you to job develop. role-playing before interacting with an employer, attending job development meetings where you take the lead and the client is sort of the observer, and then processing how that went, and then maybe flipping, and now you take more of a back seat as the employment specialist and observe the client initiating conversation with an employer. And the more that you can do that in a variety of ways, the more that confidence and that self-efficacy piece that is so crucial to that change can occur. And like I said, mentioned before, giving homework, not just to the client in terms of what they can do in between sessions, but also stating to the client what your homework is as a part of the working relationship in between the session that you're ending and the one that you're scheduling that's upcoming. If you're really being honest, open, and clear, and consistent with your communication, and you're really working towards that working relationship, then homework shouldn't just be something that you're giving out, but should be something that you're also doing as a part of that working relationship. All right, and continuing the thought of just keeping clients engaged as they're looking for work, now we need to shift gears and think about, okay, once a client's gotten a job and their lives have become busier, we still need to be engaged with the client. We want to offer those job retention supports. We want to be there to troubleshoot and problem solve natural stressors that inevitably come up once a person is working. I sure know they do for me. So it's important that you're continuing to meet with the client and adjusting your schedule so that you can do that in a way that best meets their needs, that's least intrusive in terms of, the management of their new schedule for work as well as any other activities that they have going on in life. And so an important thing to do is just make sure that you're meeting and offering a lot of praise. Be sure to pull out in conversations positives that you're hearing in terms of how the client is performing at work, feedback that the client is sharing that they're getting from colleagues or supervisors, and praise those heavily. Also, it's so important to normalize the support. Our clients need support at keeping their jobs just like we do. I know when I have a bad day at work, I will call a best friend of mine and I will talk to her on the phone and process, what happened. And she will usually help me to kind of reframe, take a step back, and recognize some strong action steps that I can take to feel better about an issue that may be going on at work. So share, circumstances or scenarios where you've needed to utilize your support system when it comes to issues at the job. Recognize that, job retention supports are going to look different for everyone and should be tailored to the client. Some clients are going to want you to come in and speak to their managers and help directly troubleshoot and open up lines of communication at the work setting. Other clients are really going to want to take a more private, discretionary approach and will want to meet you outside of the work hours to discuss how the job's going and problem solve any issues that are happening. So make sure that you're really listening to your client while you're normalizing and praising their efforts. Validate feelings. Most people are anxious when they start something new, especially a new job, mental illness or not. So again, this is really getting at, some self-disclosure of when you've been nervous about starting a job or taking on a new project or task at work. While that's anxiety evoking for everyone in terms of work. Lastly is reach out frequently. We recognize that when clients start jobs, their lives become richer and fuller and oftentimes busier. So that may mean that we have to put a little bit of extra work into how frequently we're reaching out. call, drop by the client's house or their place of work, pending their discretion and their wants and needs with support. Send a card or a letter. Talk to the client's clinical staff or other staff that they're continuing to see and see if you can piggyback a meeting. Okay, so the reality is there are times during the process of finding and keeping work that clients do become disengaged. And I think we've already discussed a lot of ways to not only build engagement, but to sustain engagement. But now let's talk about some early warning signs that your client may be becoming disengaged. The sooner that we can catch and recognize signs of disengagement, usually the better that we're going to be at reestablishing the relationship and moving forward. If we allow disengagement to occur and we don't recognize that it's coming, sometimes folks can become so disengaged that it actually impedes their ability to move forward, and it really can inhibit the progress that we're trying to support in terms of the work goal. So here are some early warning signs. If your client begins canceling their appointment right before the appointment, if they're arriving late to the appointment, if they're requesting to leave early, if they're not following through or preparing on activities that you've discussed, if they have some dramatic changes in their living environment or household status, such as, you know, losing housing, moving, you know, going through a divorce, you know, regaining custody of a child, these are things that kind of are red flags that we're going to need to offer extra support and extra assistance, because we can see that disengagement can easily occur. Change in demeanor from one session to another can be a sign. Not calling or showing to appointments. Increased expression of fear or self-doubt. And only rescheduling when you seek them out. So they do not initiate a reschedule when they've canceled or not shown up to a meeting. So if you start to notice signs of disengagement, you want to really quickly flip into re-engagement mode. So let's talk about the when and how of re-engagement. When. Be observant and act as soon as you sense signs of disengagement. So on the previous slide, I listed several signs that a client may be becoming disengaged or reasons why clients have become engaged. So really be attentive and attuned and mindful of those things if they start to present themselves in the process. If progress isn't being made, if the process of looking for work has become stagnant, you're meeting regularly, everybody's on time, but there's just nothing happening, it could be a sign that the client hasn't really fully engaged in the process. They're not generating their own ownership and feeling empowered, and that momentum of change hasn't kicked in. So that's really a sign to stop and think about how to re-engage, look at the process in a different way. And how? We want to stop, inquire, listen, and act. So it's so important when we think of re-engaging, sometimes you just have to stop what you're doing. It can be very tough if you're in a pattern and you're accustomed to, you know, meeting at a certain place at a certain time. It can be simple things like that that need to be reevaluated and replanned. You know, clients aren't always forthcoming about what they want. Unfortunately, many of our clients haven't been given a lot of options or, you know, opportunity to share what they want. When it comes to simple things like the meeting place and the meeting time, it may be that those are off point and you need to reevaluate the location that you're meeting or the time. Give your client a voice. Pass the ball to them, so to speak, in terms of planning. Maybe you really took a strong lead in initiating the expectations, what the process of IPS was going to look like, and you kind of took the reins in terms of establishing those meetings and that relationship. But if you're stuck and you're stagnant, it may be a sign that you've kind of overshadowed your client, and you need to step back and allow your client to take the reins. And so empowering them, asking open-ended questions, helping to help the client to realize discrepancies between what they're saying they want, what's happened, and where you're at can really help in terms of getting the client's voice more in the plan. Utilizing motivational interviewing and attentive listening just to offer that support to generate enthusiasm, interest, identification of skills and strengths is so crucial. And this really needs to be your client's voice. Oftentimes we are tasked as employment specialists to be the expert and to offer the expert opinion. But no one knows the real strengths, the real picture, the real skills better than that individual themselves. So really stop and be attuned to your client and their voice in the process. And lastly, allow people to make mistakes. So often in the field of social work, we want to support, we want to protect, we want to set our clients up for success, and absolutely that's the goal. But it's okay to recognize that, you know, there may be action steps that are taken that don't result in the outcome that was expected. And I think in those moments it's so important to really pull out the positives from those situations and help people to understand that learning and growth often occurs when we make mistakes. So be there to offer the support, offer the praise, and allow our clients to make those mistakes so they can grow. Lastly, let's talk a little bit about actually the last item on the IPS Supported Employment Fidelity Scale, which is assertive engagement and outreach by integrated team treatment team. In order to receive the highest score on this item, there must be evidence that all six strategies for engagement and outreach are used. The first strategy is that service termination is not based on missed appointments or fixed time limits. This is very important, particularly if you have a client who begins not showing up to sessions or is missing many sessions and you can't get a hold of them. The natural inclination would be, well, they're not motivated, let's close them. But the reality is there are a lot of factors that could be impacting that client's ability and focus in terms of connecting with you for employment. So it's important that we don't set fixed time frames on if you miss, you know, three appointments, you're closed. It's really important that we focus on how we can assertively engage in outreach to re-bolster that engagement in the process. Number two is systematic documentation. So every time that you are, working to regain that engagement and integrating outreach attempts with the treatment team, you want to make sure that you're documenting that in some fashion. You also want to make sure, like I just referenced, that you're using the clinical team as a support and as a, an element of how to effectively reach out to clients. It may be that you piggyback the next appointment with a member of the CST team because the client will be coming in to gain some money for the month or for the week. It may be that you learn from the clinician that the client is going to be seeing the psychiatrist tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And so you come to the psychiatrist's office at 2:30 when you know that they'll be finishing up to try to catch the client. So really utilizing clinical treatment team members as a part of the engagement process. Number four, making multiple home or community visits. Dropping by the client's home, leaving your card and a note talking with the clinical team and learning about maybe favorite hangouts in the community that you can drop into and try to catch the consumer. You want to make sure that you're coordinating visits with the clinical team when you're doing home visits, community visits, or just in general trying to reach the client. And then lastly, using the client's natural support system or family, making sure that you have a release, of course, on file, but really working with the clinicians to touch base with a mom, a brother, a close friend, a girlfriend or a boyfriend, a significant other who may know where the client is or may be a strong support in terms of keeping a client interested and moving forward towards their work goal. So last, there are some examples of assertive engagement and outreach by integrated team members that I want to share. Home visit with the case manager, work site visit with the case manager, piggybacking appointments with clinical staff, the case manager, the therapist, the psychiatrist, the IDDT person, etc. Asking members of the treatment team to pass messages along to the consumer and encouraging them to contact you. Community visit to a place that you know the consumer likes to hang out. If your state or your agency has a drop-in center, going there to see if you can catch them. Getting in touch with a family member. Visiting a place of worship. Mailing a letter or card, send an email together with clinical staff, and lastly, leave a note at the residence or with a landlord. So those are hopefully some helpful components to help employment specialists and IPS supervisors to really think about how to generate strong engagement from the start when intaking a client into the IPS program, how to build upon that engagement during the employment assessment phase, as well as throughout the job search and rapid job search and development phase. And then lastly, making sure to maintain that engagement so the client has support and assistance with keeping their job.
Thank you for listening. You can obtain additional recordings or download a transcript by visiting the Illinois Supported Employment Transformation Initiative website.